this year's Cubs team is scrappy. Is this the one that will finally put an end to the championship drought?
Series.
If you feel like you can't sit still, you are not alone. I wish all of you could be right here at this moment. And the 0-2. Swing and a miss. Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win. Great people got it. The Cubs with a massive celebration right near home plate. The Cubs are in the National League.
It's been a long time coming to this moment.
Unbelievable, Patrick. How great is this, huh? How great is this? Oh. This is wonderful.
Well, might have been. This is Joe Kilgallen, and this is my very special dedication to the 2015 Chicago Cubs. What you just heard was highlights from the National League Division Series, Cubs-Cardinals, in which the Chicago Cubs were victorious, winning the best of five in four games before going on to losing, also in four games, to the New York Mets. I'm going to recap the 2015 season. This podcast is normally comedians talking sports, in which I have a comedian friend of mine, or even an enemy, which isn't the case. Usually they're buddies of mine, where we talk sports for about an hour. And since the year 2015 is coming to a close, I figured why not dedicate this final podcast of the year, my first one in a long time. It's a long hiatus. I missed you. I miss you all very much. I hope you missed me too. And I'm back, though. And in 2016, we're going to be doing this regularly. Some things came up, but I'll talk about that later with you. I'll be going back to doing this once a week starting in January, which is a good time to bring a sports podcast back. You got the NFL playoffs. You got some bowl games. Basketball and hockey gets exciting. That's when basketball and hockey I really get into. Anything before Christmas is just, eh. The teams are feeling each other out still. And then we'll have a countdown to spring training. But right now, I really do want to recap the 2015 Chicago Cubs. It's been an amazing offseason even. Just last week, they signed Jason Hayward to a mega deal, taking away the Cardinals' best offensive player, the best all-around player in the Cardinals. Matt Carpenter is probably their best offensive player. But Jason Hayward is a stud. He defensively, he runs the base as well. He does all the little things. And only 26 years old, which is very young for a free agent, which is why he was so heavily sought after. And he'll be the Cubs' center fielder with Schwarber on the left and Soler on the right. Schwarber and Soler were the playoff heroes, the two best offensive players, and both very young. That was what was so exciting to me about this 2015 Chicago Cubs, how young they were. Young and fun is easily how you describe them. I'm a little emotional right now, believe it or not. After playing that video, which I've watched once or twice a week since the season ended, I always get a little teary-eyed. Something about that call. Pat Hughes. Damn it, he's good. That's what I miss. I miss listening to Cubs radio broadcasts now that I live in Los Angeles. I didn't miss a single Cubs game because I pay $24.99 a month for MLB.TV. Best money I spend. Give the password to my friends for free because I'm cool like that. I'm a very good human being. Bet you didn't know that about me. And so I didn't miss a single game. I watched every game because I could watch on my phone. So even if I was out and about, guess what? Joey still had his Cubs fill. I still got to see Montero framing pitches awesome like a stud. I still got to see the rise of Jake Arrieta. John Lester looking like an ace after a bad first month. I got to see Chris Bryant come up to the show, go 0-for-4 with 3 Ks in his first game, but come right back out there the next day and go 2-for-3 with 3 walks. Resiliency is what I saw to that young man. Your unanimous rookie of the year, Chris Bryant. 26 bombs, 99 RBIs, 855 OPS in his first full season. Wasn't even a full season, had to wait 8 games, but it was well worth the wait. I got to see Kyle Schwarber get called up for a week and just DH, in which he looked amazing, and you're thinking, how could they send him back down? They did anyway. And that's when I learned to trust Theo Epstein, the Cubs president, the GM, Jed Hoyer. These guys know what they're doing. That was the thing, too, about this whole season, was that you started to see the bandwagon Cubs fans start to come back, the ones that left a few after the last 3 seasons of just terrible baseball. And the reason I'm obsessed. I'm always going to be a diehard. But the reason I stayed optimistic through it during the rebuild was because they were honest. On day one, he said, look, this organization's a disaster. You guys haven't won in over 100 years for a reason. I'm walking through the offices. You guys still are operating on Dell computers. What are you doing? I got to change everything. So, you know, I used to use the analogy to build a mansion, you got to start with the basement. I think, I'm not an architect, but I got to imagine you start at the ground level, which in the Cubs case was the farm system and the front office, those two things. They had to bring that organization, that franchise, into the 21st century. And who better than to have Theo Epstein, a guy who started in the San Diego Padres organization after he graduated from Yale with a degree in economics. And while he was working in the Padres front office, decided, hey, I'm going to mess around and go to law school at night and get my JD, but never take the bar. Just mainly doing that so that when agents try to rip me off, I could tell them where to go. You know what I mean? Fun fact about Theo Epstein, his grandfather co-wrote the movie Casablanca. I know, crazy, right? So I stayed patient through this rebuild. I mean, there were times where it was very hard to watch the team. You know, when you had, who was that? Nate Scherholz is your right fielder, who had a decent one half of a season. When you had, they had some bad players on those teams where you're just like, there's no future with this guy. The Dale Swain years. It was sad. It was a sad bunch to watch, but you could tell, like, I was paying attention more to double A and triple A during those seasons. And a lot of people will be like, oh, the rebuild. Oh, they've rebuilt before. No, they didn't. I don't know why I gave those people such stupid voices, because that's really how they sound in my head. There's a difference, and this goes with all sports. There is a difference between rebuilding and just being bad. For some reason, dumb sports fans think, oh, my team was bad, so they're rebuilding. No, your team's just bad. Like the 2006 Cubs lost 97 games. Were they rebuilding that year? No, they just sucked. You don't rebuild when you trade 3 really good players for Juan Pierre, which is what they did, and they signed Jack Jones to a 3-year deal. That wasn't rebuilding. Those were just bad moves. They thought they could be good that year. The 2012, 13, and 14 Cubs were legit rebuilds where they took the assets they had, they flipped them for more young players. They signed pitchers that they knew they could flip around, like a Paul Mahalam, like a Jason Hammer who we got back, like a Scott Feldman. Scott Feldman trade might go down in history. That almost makes up for that horrible Lou Brock trade back in the 60s. I don't know about that, actually. I immediately heard old men barking at my ear through old style and cigarette smoke going, you're out of your fucking mind, you know? That famous horrible trade. But think about that. We got Scott Feldman, flipped him for Jake Arrieta, Pedro Strop. Pedro Strop was our setup man who at times made you want to pull your hair out, but overall was one of the better setup men in the National League. Good pitcher overall. And then Jake Arrieta, your Cy Young Award winner. That's right, the 2015 Cubs brought home some awards. They did very well at the Oscars and the Grammys. You got Rookie of the Year Bryant, Cy Young Arrieta, like I mentioned, Manager of the Year Joe Maddon. Anthony Rizzo was fourth in MVP voting. That's pretty solid, too. He's a young man, turned 26 in August. The core is exciting for this Cubs team. Yeah, there were some moments, though, in particular that I want to address. Then I want to address the offseason and tell you what I'm very excited about going into the 2016 year. Dexter Fowler will be missed, but one of my turning points of this moment for me as a fan was when Fowler, against his former team, the Colorado Rockies, hits a two-run bomb to give us a lead. It was a comeback, come-from-behind win, and that was like our first come-from-behind win. And it was one of those games where I'm like, man, this team's in every game. This team could be in every game. Because before the season started, my prediction for the Cubs, I thought they'd win 85, 86 games, compete for the wild card. Maybe if they made the right trade at the deadline for like a veteran bat, I thought they would need like another bat, which they didn't get. Instead, they called up Schwarber, who's the nickname we're still floating around. Some people are calling him Baby Bull. Some people are calling him Bam Bam. I like Bam Bam. I think Bam Bam's going to stick. He just looks like one of those badass dudes, you know, who's not going to take shit from anybody. Like, they have him listed at 6 foot. I don't think he's that tall. I think he's more like 5'10", just wide shoulders. Dude was all-state linebacker in high school in Ohio. Dude's a badass. So that moment when Fowler hit that, I remember going, okay. Then it started a string where we had tons of come-from-behind wins. I think they led all of baseball in walk-off wins and come-from-behind wins, which obviously you can't walk off on the road. You know that, or you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. I would hope so. So Fowler was big right there. Then another turning point for me was it's not so much like the moment itself wasn't like, oh, it led to a six-game winning streak or something like that, which the Cubs had their share of. It spoke volumes to what kind of team this was going to be. Chris Bryant comes up, and he's doing pretty well. You know, he's driving in some runs, but it took him 80-some-odd at-bats to get his first home run, which was, you know, for most rookies, isn't that big a deal. But for a guy like this, who had the previous season in the minors led all professional baseball 43 home runs and led spring training in home runs, it was a little surprising. It was a little worrisome even. You're like, is he pressing? Is he trying too hard? What's going on? He finally gets that first dinger up in Milwaukee against the Brewers, obviously, in Miller Stadium, Miller Park. I can't talk. Fuck you. And I'm a little rusty. I haven't podcasted in a while. And when he hit that bomb, what was cool about it is right when he's approaching first, you could see everyone in the Cubs dugout going, what do we do? Like, we got to give him a hard time. Somehow we're going to give him the silent treatment. And they all just go sprinting into the clubhouse. So when Brian steps on home and goes into the dugout is completely empty. Check the video out on YouTube. It's pretty hilarious. You can even see him with a grin on his face. He goes running right into the clubhouse, probably to give him shit, saying, ask for you guys, you know. You know, whatever. I don't know. I've never been in a baseball dugout. I don't know if he went back there going, that hurt my feelings. Or if he was like, what's going on, boys? Huh? We doing this? We getting some high fives? We going to strip club later? What's going on? Old KB's on the board. Home run number one. Get used to it. That moment right there, I'm like, all right, this is a fun team. Then they had like the tradition of every time someone got a big hit or any kind of hit, they would rub the helmet, a signal to the teammates. They had the rally bucket. You know, that was kind of fun when they put buckets over their head when, you know, they were trying to rally in the ninth. This was just a team where I think, and it all starts with Joe Maddon. That move was huge. That really was, and him at his press conference saying, I'm talking playoffs this year, I'm talking World Series this year, and this team's going to believe it. Damn it, Joe. I believed it. That's right, Papa Joe. I believed it. What a manager. Well, I mean, you'd heard the hype about how great. I mean, I knew he was great. You heard about how awesome he was in Tampa. You saw the results there, how he took this failing loser franchise and turned it around to make him a powerhouse in the AL East on a minimum budget, which is not easy. You know, young players coming up, feeling relaxed right away. He was the perfect guy to take over. We hired him like a week or two after we told Rick Renteria, who was the 2014 manager, who actually had the last couple months of 2014. The Cubs were looking good. I think they finished like 32-28 in August and September. So you're thinking, yeah, why not give Rick Renteria another shot? You know, we brought Soler up. You know, Baez came up, although he was striking out every other at-bat. You know, let's give this guy another whirl. So they told Rick Renteria, yeah, we're going to have you back. But then Joe Maddon becomes available. Sorry, Ricky boy. I do not fault Theo and Jad for going after Joe Madden. When a guy like Joe Madden becomes available, you go for him. It's that simple. And I'm sure Rick Renteria had some hurt feelings, but, you know, I can't feel too bad for you. You got paid. The Cubs paid you for not doing shit this past year. People remember that? Do you guys realize that? He was still under contract, so he got paid for just sitting at home. So don't feel too bad for him. It always cracks me up in sports. There's always some story where a guy gets fired and they're like, well, it was the player's fault. You know, and it's like, no, I don't feel bad for these guys. You don't. Like, look, yeah, it sucks to get fired, but not when they're making millions of dollars. And I have no problem when a team fires a coach for any reason. I think the average sports fan will still do the whole, well, the coach isn't playing. Doesn't matter. He's the leader. He's up top. Buck stops with him. I would be totally okay with if, like, a front office was like, we hired him to win a World Series. We didn't win the World Series last year. Bye. Now, obviously, it depends on the circumstances. You know, if it's some team where they spent, you know, $200 million, like the Dodgers, they just fired Don Mattingly. Some people might be like, well, they went to the playoffs. I mean, he got them there. The players didn't. Nah, at that point, it's like, nah, he's got to go. We spent a lot of money on this team. On paper, we should have beat a lot of these teams. We didn't. He's gone. That's how that works. But, yeah, Joey Madden, curating fun. He'd bring – they had a zoo animal day. They had, like, a petting zoo in left field. Players were taking selfies with a cheetah. They had they were like different, you know, they had like Hawaiian nights where they all dressed like Hawaiians for a road trip. The one road trip, the West Coast road trip, because it was a late night flight, they wore pajamas. Everyone wore pajamas. There's a team picture of them all in different pajamas. It's hilarious. And that happened to be the night Jake Arrieta throws a no-hitter against the aforementioned Los Angeles Dodgers. I was lucky enough to be at that game, had great seats, thanks to my man Roy Wood Jr., the Daily Show's newest correspondent, the star of the new Trevor Noah season. Check him out. Roy Wood Jr. If he's performing stamp in your city, go see him. The man's the best. And he's killing it on the Daily Show. He hits me up going, hey, Cubs, Dodgers, Sunday night. It's going to be on ESPN. Tickets are on me. I'm like, dude, you're too nice. I'm going to buy you an extra large Pepsi just because you're that cool. No problem. He's like, what about a Dodger dog? I'm like, what am I made of money? All right, I'll get you a Dodger dog too, but only if the Cubs score first. That's how my dad used to do when he took us to games when we were kids. He'd be like, you don't get ice cream unless the Cubs score. And many times we didn't get ice cream. And it caused a lot of pain, some hunger even. So we're there. A few other comedians, Steve Byrne, big dude. Not a big dude, but I was going to say big buddy of mine, but that makes no sense. Great comedian, Felipe Esparza, Sarah Tiena, Felipe's wife, lovely lady, can't remember her name. And there we are. Felipe's a Dodger fan, so we're having some fun back and forth. I started the field around the fifth inning because that slider was looking tight. That cutter was looking tight. Arrieta was in command of all of his pitches. They weren't really getting good contact against him. I started to feel it then, but, you know, it's a no-hitter. You don't want to say anything. But I also told myself, this is 2015 Chicago Cubs. Beginning of the year, I almost knocked on wood in a situation in which the announcer said something stupid. And I'm really bad with superstition, especially with the Cubs. So I'd always knock on wood. I wouldn't move from a seat. You know, if my wife opened her mouth during the right pond, I'd be like, shut the fuck up! You know, stuff like that. Stuff like that has to happen. I was very superstitious when it came to my Chicago Cubbies. I just freaked my dog out a little bit there, by the way. But this year I said no more of that because none of that is real. Superstition, none of that's real. Cubs didn't lose because of a goat. They didn't lose because of a black cat. They lost because they weren't good. So I'm like, no more knocking on wood. None of that crap matters. I never liked it when people would say, oh, same old Cubs. Whenever the Cubs would lose or blow it or something like that. Same. No, it's not the same old Cubs. These are, the same jerseys, but these are different human beings wearing them. The 69 team has nothing to do with the 2015 team. As a matter of fact, the entire 2015 team was not alive when the 69 team played. So don't give me that shit. Be better than that. So right around the fifth inning, I got that no-hitter. I started to feel it, feeling good. Cubs took an early lead. Chris Bryant hit a two-run bomb. Cubs are up 2-0. Didn't get a lot of offense going after that. Seventh inning, mows them down. Eighth inning, mows them down. We go to the ninth. First batter, strikeout. Feeling great. Everyone's buzzing. Even the Dodger fans are standing up going, wow, this is something. And they had just gotten no hit like 2 weeks before. Second batter, Jimmy Rollins, leadoff hitter. Swings and misses a pitch in the dirt. ESPN Sunday Night Baseball camera. Boom. Who does it find? Joseph Matthew Kilgallen and Steve, William Byrne, I don't know his middle name. There we are, we're cheering right there. I'm wearing my Sandberg throwback 1984 Cubs jersey, wearing my Cubs fitted hat. I had a beard at the time because I was just being lazy, so I looked extra like red and mean. And right there, I kind of had a real intense look on my face. And then they get the strikeout, Utley everyone's going nuts. You know, we're having fun. We're cheering. I'm, you know, freaking out. I've never seen a no-hitter before. This is nuts. You know, I'm having a blast. Start, like, filming it. My phone blows up. I'm just getting text message. It's, like, blowing up. And I'm like, damn. I mean, I knew I was a big Cubs fan, but this is ridiculous. Is everyone hitting me up to be like, did you see that no-hitter? Of course I saw that no-hitter. Then I'm reading the text, and they're like, dude, you were on ESPN. ESPN had you on the camera for, like, 4 or 5 seconds. It was obviously you. It was nuts, man. Oh, my God. I can't believe you're at that game. Jake Arrieta had a no-hitter. And I was going crazy. I'm like, holy shit. And then people are texting me pictures because they took pictures of their TV with me on it. And I'm like, oh, this is great. So I post the picture on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's blowing up, all that. I'm even getting comments from people going, hey, man, even when you're happy, you look pissed off. And I was like, dude, I'm intense, man. I had that, like, that's what kind of sports fan I am. Like, I'm cheering, but I'm very much like, fuck yeah, dude, let's do this. You know, I'm like that kind of grinding my teeth sports fan. I'm not one of those, yay, woo. I can't do that. I'm not that guy. So, yeah, that was one, another highlight, Arrieta. September, we went into a nice playoff, got into playoff mode where each game went more and more intense. And I noticed Joe Maddon changed the managing, where he would pull players earlier for defensive replacement. He had no problem pinch hitting if the moment was right. And that's the thing I loved about this guy's manager. Because, like, it's not always in the eighth or ninth inning games are won or lost. Sometimes they're won or lost in the third or fourth inning. I remember one time, doubleheader against the Reds. This was late July, I want to say. And he gave Bryant a day off. Guy was kind of due for a day off. But third inning, Cubs went down 3-0 after the first. Third inning, we get a run back. It's 3-1. We have second and third pitcher spot due up. He's like, screw that. Bryant, go bat. Because this is the game right here. If he gets a base hit, it's tied 3-3. Boom. Third inning on, it's a new ball game. That's how you win baseball. What do you do? Brought in Bryant. Bryant doubled right there. I think Fowler, who was coming, or no, Russell's coming up afterwards, he had a base hit, scored Bryant. We're up 4-3. 90% sure that's how that went down. But damn, what a fun year. What a fun year. I remember talking to Brendan McGowan, who is a comedian I interviewed last on this podcast, Comedians Talking Sports. And we're just talking about, like, win or lose, this is just the start of something special, you know? It almost makes me think of that scene in Happy Gilmore when he says to Shooter McGavin, hey, Shooter, the way I see this, we've only just begun. And then they play some cool, like, late 90s music. I'm not really sure what song, but it got you going. Yeah, that's the way I saw it with this 2015 team. I'm like, we've only just begun. And the Cubs fans did, they were cool, because I was actually... That one game playoff that took place in Pittsburgh, I was happy it took place in Pittsburgh. A lot of Cubs fans were like, damn it, we finished 97 wins, one game behind Pittsburgh. If we would have just won one more, I think we had the tiebreaker, so we could have had that one game playoff in Wrigley. How great would that have been? And I was like, no, I want it in Pittsburgh. Because I had flashbacks to the 08 playoff run where I remember it was against the Dodgers. We went down like 4-2 in one of the games in like game one. And I remember just seeing, like, the life gets sucked out of that stadium because there are too many people who could afford tickets to Cubs playoff games who aren't real Cubs fans who immediately go into that mode of here we go again. And they've got that shit vibe and that shit energy that Joe Maddon has done such a great job keeping away from this team and really done a good job of changing the culture. Because, look, I know it's been 107 years, but you're not 107 years old. So it hasn't been 107 years for you. It's been 30 years for me. You know, I don't have to, 31 actually, I had a birthday recently, a few months ago. And so, yeah, I don't, and plus really not even 31 years because I only started remembering watching them when I was like 5. So it's 26 years I've had to deal without a World Series. I know it sucks listening to other Cardinals and Sox fans, but just, you know, drop that negative bullshit. And I didn't want those fans who hadn't been paying attention to the Cubs, being at an important playoff game like that. Because if they had been paying attention to the Cubs, they would know that this Cubs team are never out of a game. That was the 2015 Cubs could be down 7-0 in the first inning, and I would still have confidence that they would make a comeback because that was the type of character this team had. So, no, I didn't want them there. I wanted that game in Pittsburgh. I wanted that game on the road because I didn't want them to go down 1-0 and have every fucking loser jerk-off fan that, you know, graduated from some Big Ten school and is living in some Lincoln Park apartment with his 4 idiot friends who, you know, took out his bonus money to buy the tickets. You know the type. The same people who, when they hit like 30, they're like, oh, time to settle down. They marry some skank that they met at the bar. Then they immediately move out to the suburbs because the city's too dangerous to raise children. You know, those losers, can't stand those people. I didn't want any of them there. So here we are in Pittsburgh. Jake Arrieta versus Gerrit Cole, two of the top pitchers in the National League. And Arrieta, from the second half on, had the best second half in baseball history. Just completely dominant. 0.69 ERA, 12-1 record. Like, are you kidding me? What are you doing, Jake? Guy's a freak. And really, a lot of people will be like, well, what was the difference between him in Baltimore versus what he became in Chicago? Well, age. I mean, he's now 29 years old. We got him when he was 27. That's usually when a pitcher enters their prime. And in Baltimore, he never threw the cutter. He learned and harnessed the cut fastball in Chicago. And our pitching coach is very good at turning pitchers around by simplifying their mechanics. You do those two things, that's huge. It's big. That's big. Learning a brand new dominant pitch, because his other pitches were already good, and learning the new mechanics helped his control. Yeah, he became a different pitcher since we got him in halfway through 2013. He's been a freak. And he throws the complete game shutout. But what was really cool to me, how the game started, Fowler gets a base hit, steals second. Schwarber, who's got 22 years old, has got such great plate discipline, sees a pitch on the outside, doesn't try to do too much with it, just flares it down the line, goes with the pitch, lands fair, Fowler scores easy, boom, we're up 1-0. And you see Schwarber at first base all jacked up looking at the dugout like, let's go, baby, come on. I actually like it when people bring that kind of intensity to baseball, because baseball could be a game where people could get a little lazy, you know, a little like, oh, you know. They could get a little bit like 9-year-old playing right field, throwing his glove in the air, not really paying attention, kicking the dirt, that kind of thing. So yeah, his intensity was there. And then later in the game, he hits a ball into the Allegheny River, which, by the way, hey, TBS, great job not having a camera on that, fucking idiots. TBS was terrible for the playoffs. They sucked. Stick to reruns of Seinfeld, because you guys are killing it in that department. Love you for that as a network. Yeah, so Schwarber, when he hit that ball too, he did a little bat flip, just kind of like, get off me ball, just blasted it. And apparently he called that shot. He told people, he goes, I'm going to hit one off of Cole, because I guess the Cubs had faced Cole like a couple weeks earlier and Cole kind of dominated him. He's like, I know what he's got. I paid attention. I know what he's bringing to the dance. He hasn't seen my moves yet, though. He hasn't seen all my moves. Fowler later hits a home run. Cubs win 4-0. Everyone goes crazy, you know, big celebration. We go into the St. Louis series. We lose game one, getting shut out. I was in Vegas at the time, did not handle it well. I actually spiked my friend's sunglasses off the wall at the sports book at the Flamingo. They didn't kick me out, believe it or not. Nobody really even went up to me and said, hey, you should calm down. I guess I was just in such a crazy psycho mode that people were like, no, we should give that guy his space. He might open fire, which I did not have a gun on me. So don't worry about that. And I would never. John Lackey. He was the Cardinals pitcher that shut us out. I looked up Lackey's playoff numbers. I remember right around that time going, damn, this guy's got good playoff numbers. Because I remember thinking, I'm like, this guy's like 36. He had a great year, too. He had a 2.7 ERA. He's their best starting pitcher overall, John Lackey. You know, Wainwright was hurt, later became a bullpen pitcher. And what did the Cubs do in the offseason? First signing, John Lackey. 2-year, $32 million deal. Great deal for the Cubs. Only committing 2 years for him at this age is awesome. Because they're going for it in 2016. And nothing indicates, you know, his velocity stayed the same. Everything seems like he should be the same pitcher. I mean, you can't expect a 2.7 ERA again, just like you can't expect Arrieta even to have a 1.73 ERA. And, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a drop back. But I still expect Arrieta, Lester, and Lackey to be a hell of a top three. And in the process, you weaken the Cardinals. Like I mentioned before, we took Hayward, took Lackey. It's great. So the Cubs win that series. Best of four, so emotional to beat the Cardinals, the hated, dreaded rival Cardinals, who really as an organization kind of remind me of the Red Wings in hockey, where as a Chicago sports fan, I hate them. I guess I have to throw the Packers in this too. As a Chicago sports fan, I hate them. But damn it, they do things right. They always do things right. They always have a good farm system. They always spend money in the right places. They always have good management. They play a certain style of baseball. The Red Wings in hockey, Packers in football, and the Cardinals in baseball. I don't think there's an NBA equivalent to those three. Where their teams, as a Chicago sports fan, it's in my DNA to hate those teams. But damn it, do I respect them, you know? Beating them was fantastic, though, because you saw Jorge Soler, who had an injury plague 2015, up and down. You know, had a few weeks where he looked good, only hit 10 home runs overall, hit like 265. Right field defense. I mean, it was weird because the early part of the season, he looked really strong in right field and then just kind of took bad routes and everything. And the outfield defense overall was really shaky. Kyle Schwarber at times did look incredibly lost in left field. His bat more than made up for it, though. Guy had 5 home runs. Would have been the story of the playoffs offensively if it wasn't for Daniel Murphy, the homophobic bigot from the Mets, who made a deal with the devil, I'm pretty sure. The guy had 11 home runs in the regular season, had like 7 or 8 in the playoffs. Yeah, bullshit, you know? Can't stand that guy. And there's always some Irish guy who makes me feel like, ah, oh, dude, I would normally root for you because I'm like that, but I can't root for you because you're a bad person. And you got that smug. You know what he looked like? You ever see Major League 2? Forget this actor's name, but he always plays a smug jerk with a toothpick in his mouth. The guy in Major League 2 who they end up trading to the White Sox, lo and behold, because that team just, you have any guy in the White Sox jersey that's white and immediately looks like trash. Just having some fun with you Sox fans. He looked like that dude. I forget the guy's name. He was the catcher in Major League, but that's what Daniel Murphy looked like. Just this smug guy that when he got to the plate, you know, dug into the batter's box, crouched a little bit, and you're like, who's this jerk off? Who's this Sally who hits 11 home runs in the regular season? A guy who's a below average player. It's the thing about the playoffs, you know? Someone gets hot and all of a sudden they're the hero. So that's what really killed us against the Mets, though. That one guy, I mean, the first couple games we were in it, we lost 4-1, 4-2. So we were really just a hitter away. And Arrieta against the Mets had a real shaky start. And if anyone thinks that he choked, you're out of your mind. That was going into his 250th inning, which before that, his previous high was 180. I don't care who you are. You could condition as much as you want. If you've never experienced that before, it's going to be different for you. His fastball went from an easy 96 to a 91, 92. So, yeah, that's not choking. That's just wear and tear. That's just someone, yeah. I hope they would monitor his innings early part of 2016 just to keep him strong toward the end. The guy conditions, and while I'm not worried about injury with him. But, yeah. So that was the bummer there. It sucked losing to the Mets. So, you know, I was in a depression for a while. I didn't leave my house. I didn't bathe. I didn't feed myself, that's for sure. And it was rough. But there was a lot to take away from that. Like I mentioned, Jorge Soler, Kyle Schwarber, Rizzo and Bryant didn't hit as well as you'd like to see in the playoffs. Castro, who I need to talk about now, who had a great August and September. Big turning point in 2015 again was moving Addison Russell to shortstop. Long overdue. But again, that shows you what kind of manager Joe Maddon is. Because a lot of teams would be like, I don't want to mess with the chemistry. Starlin Castro's still young. But like, it's like, no, this guy is better than him. Russell is a better shortstop than Castro. Let's put Russell there. Enough is enough. And he did it. And that was the big thing. Like we, at the trade deadline, we had a Tommy Hunter, a bullpen pitcher who was not good for us. And we had a Dan Heron who I think went 4-2 with a 4 ERA. So it was like, all right, fine. You were better than our previous number 5 starter, Wada. But still not like an impact move. But our impact moves really were moving Russell to shortstop and bringing up Schwarber full time. That was, those were huge moves and big keys. And missing Russell for the NLCS, he got injured in that deciding game at Wrigley against the Cardinals, game 4. That really hurt too because it shook up the defense. You got Baez, who was in AAA the whole season, had dealt with a lot. You know, his sister died in the end of the year. He had an injury for, you know, going in and out, who had been learning how to play second base for a while, going back to shortstop, who he looked very shaky there. You know, and then so Brian probably was trying to, you know, overcompensate for that. And you got everyone trying to fill in, you know, just one little piece. It's like an engine, one little fuck up. And it could really, you know, it could really change the whole dynamic of the defense. And that's what happened. But Starlin Castro was traded to the New York Yankees for Adam Warren and Brendan Ryan. Brendan Ryan is a guy that they might have even caught. He's kind of like a defensive replacement guy. You know, can't hit for dick. And some Cubs fans were mad about that. Like, how do we trade Castro? Look, Castro is like our 8th best player. We were going to have to move somebody, and we replaced him with Ben Zobrist, who granted will be 35 when the season starts, but just came off winning the World Series with the Kansas City Royals, in which he had a great year. In the playoffs, he had 20 hits, 10 of them for extra bases. The guy is a winner. He can play left field. He can play right field. He can play third base, first base, second base, and still hits really well. And he's the type of bat that this offense needed. The Cubs were too a strikeout or home run type of hitters. They struck out way too much, Castro included. Now, I know Castro's only 25, 3-time All-Star, and looked a lot better when he went to second base. But if he would have started 2016 the way he started 2015, then we wouldn't be able to get shit for him. So, yeah, let's sell high a little bit. Adam Warren is a guy who pitched great as a starter last year and in the bullpen. Hit a 3.4 ERA combined between those two, and you know, 17 starts at an ERA in the low threes, which pitching in the AL East, which has a lot of great offenses. I mean, NL Central is now the dominant division in all of baseball, but I think this guy could be someone who knows. Maybe if Jason Hamill pitches like the Jason Hamill the second half as opposed to the first half, he might get replaced by Adam Warren. I think it's a good move, and it freed up second base for Ben Zobrist. Who, adding him, this guy, Zobrist, walked more than he struck out. He barely strikes out. He's got a very low strikeout rate, which is just what the Cubs needed. Add in Jason Hayward to that mix to lead off, I'm assuming. I like him as lead off because he's also stole 23 bags. We added more contact and better defensive players. We got better in every facet of the game going into 2016. And it shows that we're going for it this year. Zobrist is a four-year deal. They both took less money to go to us. I think all three of the big free agents we signed, Trevor Cahill, four. Cahill was great in the pen at the end of the year. All four took less money to come with the Cubs because they know there's something special going on here. And I think our core is in place. I think Zobrist will be good for three of those 4 years. Even that fourth year, he's a guy that will graciously go into being a bench player. Hayward could opt out after the three-year mark or the four-year mark, at which point we're going to have even more revenue coming in from a new TV deal. So I have no problem. I have no doubts that we'll re-sign him if we need to keep him there. If not, who knows? Maybe someone else will open up. But I'd like to keep this young core together as long as possible. So it's exciting times. Yes, Darlin was a fun player. I think he's going to do well in New York. But again, he was like our seventh or eighth best player, guys. Can't get too sad about that. He was a guy that often hit into double plays. You know, he did that stupid swing that he started to fix toward the end of the year where it's like, oh, let's throw Starlin a breaking pitch on the outside corner. He'll then shoot his hips out toward third base, reach out, even though the ball's a foot outside, flick his wrist over, trying to pull the ball instead of going with it, and ground weakly into double play. And Starlin doesn't pay attention in the field. I was talking about Little League plays earlier. This dude's fucking writing his name in the goddamn sand. In cursive, mind you. In cursive. So, yeah, I mean, it's sad to see him go, like I said before, but this team is so much better on paper going into this year. You guys are going to love watching Ben Zobrist play baseball. He's got a very high baseball IQ. Jason Hayward is just a defensive stud. He'll handle center field no problem. Almost reminds me of Andre Dawson, who was a four-time Gold Glover as a center fielder before he became a Hall of Famer as a right fielder. And I think Schwarber will be much better in left. I know he looked atrocious out there at times. The guy's an athlete, though. Yeah, he may look a little stocky, but he's an athlete. He was a catcher the whole year until he didn't start playing left field until he was up in the pros. So I think with a whole spring training working in left field solely, and they're going to throw him in the catcher every now and then as well. But I think we're fine with Montero and Ross. Ross is really just, he's kind of like that leader. He's like that guy that tells you some war stories. He's like that guy that every bar needs to be like, all right, you've had enough every now and then. You know, that old grizzled guy that you really like. He's like the uncle that doesn't tell racist stories, although he's probably got a couple good racist jokes where you're like, Uncle Dave, dude. And he's like, nah, it's cool. You know, my best friend's black. You know, that kind of guy. But like not the bad one. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to paint David Ross in a good picture, but also let you know what kind of grizzled veteran he is. Well, again, baseball. Oh, I'm excited for the 2016 season. I know I got a lot of hockey to watch still, and my fantasy football team is, you know, I need a nice night tonight, but I might be in the championship again for the third time in the last 4 years, which would definitely raise me to expert status. The Bulls are looking tricky. Again, I don't just talk Chicago sports if you're listening to this for the first time. I talk national sports. But, you know, it starts with my passions, my teams. The NBA season really starts after Christmas for me. Same with hockey. But yeah, the hockey is looking exciting this year. When you think about Patrick Kane being the best player in the league, he went from almost being in jail to going to be the MVP. So got a lot of sports stuff. So again, thank you for coming back to listening to Comedians Talking Sports. I'm going to be bringing out a lot of cool comedian guests. I might even do podcasts like this where it's just me rambling for 45 minutes. We'll see how it goes. I want to end with this. This is something that really opened my eyes about what kind of year the Cubs had and how the culture around the Chicago Cubs is changing, not only in Chicago, but nationally. This is toward the end of October. I was talking with a couple comedian friends of mine. One's a Dolphins fan, one's a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And the Kansas City Chiefs obviously now have been killing it, but at the time they were looking very mediocre. And they were all talking about their football teams and stuff. And then they looked at me and I'm like, yeah, I'm a Bears fan. And they both said, hey man, at least you got the Cubs. I remember thinking to myself, that is going to be the first time anyone has ever said that to me. Hey, at least you've got the Cubs. No Chicago sports fan has ever been told that. And I got to tell you, it feels pretty good.